When you go to a theater, like to watch a play, your eyes are naturally drawn to the actors under the spotlight, right? You watch the dramatic speeches, the visible conflicts, the whole center stage action.
Right, the stuff that's designed to be watched.
Exactly. It's captivating, but if you only watch the actors, you are completely missing the actual mechanics of the show. I mean, the real story, the mechanism that actually dictates what happens next, is up in the rafters.
It's the stagehands.
Yeah,
Yeah.
it's the stagehands pulling the ropes, the technicians changing the backdrops, the directors controlling the lighting. If you really want to understand the play, you have to look past the spotlight.
You basically have to look at the systems that are actually supporting the stage.
I'm Alina.
And I'm Adrian.
And to you listening right now, our fellow truth seeker, welcome. On behalf of the Great Awakening Report, we are just thrilled you are joining us for the weekly briefing subscribers Q&A for the week of April 24th.
It's a big week.
It really is. Our mission for today's deep dive is, well, it's pretty ambitious. We have taken 57 independent sources, pulling from geopolitics, supply chain data, macroeconomics, earth sciences, all of it, to uncover the architecture of the stage itself.
Because we know you aren't just looking for, what is happening in the mainstream headlines. You demand to know the mechanics actually driving them.
Right. And synthesizing those 57 distinct sources revealed this one glaring overarching theme, didn't it?
Yeah, convergence. We're moving through a period where systems across global logistics, energy grids, institutional finance, and honestly, even our physical environment are reaching these critical stress thresholds simultaneously.
Like all at once.
Exactly. We aren't dealing with isolated incidents anymore. We're watching a deeply interconnected global system reorganize itself in real time.
So let's start mapping that reorganization with the most visible friction points out there. Because a massive portion of subscriber questions this week, they centered on the physical conflicts dominating the news.
Understandably so.
Right. People are asking if these border disputes and territorial clashes are genuinely about historical ideology and land, or, if there is an entirely different game being played.
Well, the ideology is sort of the script the actors recite. But the actual objective is a concept called layered war.
Layered war.
Yeah. The true prize in modern geopolitics is not the dirt itself, it is the control of movement.
Okay, that makes sense.
Think about the major maritime corridors. You've got the Strait of Malacca, the Strait of Hormuz, the Bab el-Mandeb. These aren't just bodies of water, they are the physical arteries of the global economy.
Right, and when an artery gets pinched, I mean, the entire body feels it
And
immediately.
instantly.
Let's break down how that actually functions economically, because it's fascinating.
Oh.
If a localized conflict threatens a specific shipping lane, it's not just a military issue, right?
No, not at all.
Because insurance syndicates like Lloyd's of London, they instantly spike the maritime insurance premiums for any vessel moving through that zone.
That is the exact mechanism. So suddenly, a massive shipping conglomerate has to reroute around an entire continent.
Which adds what, weeks of transit time?
Weeks of transit time and millions in fuel costs. And those costs are immediately passed down the supply chain.
Right to the consumer.
Exactly, inflating the price of food, electronics, and energy for everyone. So the nation or power block that controls, or honestly, even just credibly threatens, those logistical choke points wields massive leverage over the global financial system.
Without ever having to declare a formal economic war.
Exactly.
Okay, but here is where I really need to press you on the conclusions being drawn by some of our listeners.
Sure.
Because when you map out how perfectly a disruption in a strait cascades into global inflation and energy scarcity, it is incredibly tempting to see like a singular coordinated master plan.
Oh, absolutely.
From the outside, that flawless chain reaction looks like there is this smoke-filled room of string pullers orchestrating every single disruption perfectly.
Right, it looks that way because the global system is so highly integrated. But the source material actually points away from a singular master plan.
Wait, really? So it's not coordinated?
Not in the way people think. What we are actually observing are multiple competing powers operating within the exact same fragile architecture. You have sovereign nations, massive multinational corporations, regional alliances, all pushing against the boundaries of a shared, tightly woven infrastructure.
So it's not a single conductor leading an orchestra in perfect harmony. It's more like a dozen different bands trying to play their own songs on the exact same stage, and the resulting acoustic resonance just happens to shatter the windows of the theater.
That is a highly accurate way to frame it. Overlapping competitions create cascading effects. They just look perfectly coordinated from the outside.
Wow. And that reality bridges us directly to the lifeblood of those shipping lanes, because the control of movement we are discussing is ultimately about moving resources.
Right. And the foundational resource of modern civilization is energy.
Which was the second massive theme in the subscriber inbox this week. So many of you are asking if the next major global paradigm shift will come from an energy breakthrough rather than, say, a geopolitical victory or a financial collapse.
Well, energy is the ultimate upstream lever. You have to think of it as the foundational operating system of the global economy.
The operating system, okay.
Yeah, everything else. From the nitrogen fertilizers used in commercial agriculture, to the server farms powering artificial intelligence, to the physical transport of goods, it all runs as an application on that base energy operating system.
So whoever establishes the next standard in energy density and distribution essentially writes the rules for the next century of human progress.
Precisely.
But let's ground this for a second, because there is a very persistent narrative in the independent research community regarding suppressed energy tech.
I know exactly what you're going to say.
Right. The assumption is often that because legacy energy monopolies suppress alternatives, there must be like a flawless free energy device hidden in a warehouse somewhere.
And if we just expose the cover-up, the world transforms tomorrow.
Exactly. People think it's just waiting to drop.
The physical constraints of global infrastructure make an overnight transition impossible, regardless of the technology.
How so?
Let's assume a miraculous, highly efficient new energy source is verified today. The global economy is physically hardwired for combustion and alternating current. We have trillions of dollars sunk into oil refineries, high-voltage transmission lines, substations.
Internal combustion manufacturing chains.
All of it.
So you can't just install a revolutionary new iOS on a 1995 desktop computer and expect it to run?
Right. The hardware has to be entirely rebuilt.
Wow.
Any transformative energy technology has to pass through grueling physical and economic phases. Huh. The legacy systems, which remember represent the largest pools of consolidated wealth on the planet, will heavily resist it.
Of course.
And then, even if it breaks through, you face a decades-long, multi-trillion-dollar phase of infrastructure adoption and normalization.
So the power shift via energy is inevitable, but the mechanics dictate a marathon, not a sudden switch.
Exactly. It's a massive grind.
And while that transition slowly grinds forward, the current operators of that legacy infrastructure are consolidating their grip, which brings us to the third major area of subscriber inquiry.
The institutional overlap.
Yes. We are receiving a massive influx of questions regarding the sheer concentration of influence among the institutions managing our basic needs.
It's very visible right now.
It really is. People are looking at the boards of major agriculture conglomerates, pharmaceutical giants, and global asset managers, and they are seeing the exact same names and entities overlapping across all of them.
And that scrutiny is entirely justified by the data. The independent reports highlight how heavily concentrated capital allocation has become.
Right.
Massive asset management firms use mechanisms like environmental, social, and governance, or ESG standards, to apply uniform pressure across completely different sectors.
Because they control the funding taps.
Exactly. Because they hold the purse strings, they can effectively mandate that agricultural producers and healthcare conglomerates adopt the exact same operational policies.
So when the same institutional investor essentially owns the farm producing your food, the pharmaceutical company treating your illness, and the water treatment facility managing your city, I mean, skepticism isn't a fringe conspiracy at that point.
No, it is a highly rational reflex.
Right. If I go to a mechanic and realize he also owns the tow truck company and the only parts distributor in a 50-mile radius, I'm going to heavily scrutinize my invoice.
That's a great way to put it.
But we need to separate the mechanics from the malice here, don't we? Is this overlapping influence inherently a malicious cartel designed to suppress the population? Or is it just a byproduct of scaling systems to serve 8 billion people?
The briefing emphasizes a crucial distinction here between necessary integration and excessive concentration.
Okay, unpack that.
On a purely functional level, the systems must communicate. Agriculture heavily impacts human biology and public health, both of those tied directly into environmental stability and economic output. Managing global supply chains of that magnitude requires a high degree of integration.
The silos have to be connected to function at scale?
They do. The vulnerability occurs when the decision-making authority within those integrated systems is reduced to a monoculture.
Ah, I see.
When an incredibly small group of entities dictates the terms for global agriculture, health, and finance simultaneously, you lose systemic resilience.
Because if they make a miscalculation in policy, the error doesn't stay contained to one sector.
Exactly. It infects the entire integrated system. The public is feeling the squeeze of inflation, declining food quality, and institutional overreach, so they are naturally looking up to see whose hand is turning the vice.
It is the ultimate demand for accountability in a system that has just grown too complex to remain opaque. And that stress isn't just limited to human-made institutions either. The environment itself is exhibiting extreme volatility, which was the fourth major topic subscribers wanted us to address.
The Earth changes.
Yeah. We are seeing unprecedented atmospheric extremes, erratic storm systems, and heightened seismic activity. Are these environmental extremes part of a larger cycle we just don't fully understand?
Well, the data paints a picture of a planet undergoing intense, dual-layered dynamic shifts. Internally, we track well-understood tectonic movements, shifting oceanic currents, and atmospheric pressure anomalies.
Sure.
But the external factors are requiring serious reassessment right now. We are in a period of highly documented intense solar activity.
Like solar flares.
Coronal mass ejections and geomagnetic storms.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And they are directly interacting with our planet.
Let's explain how that interaction actually works, because I feel like the sun is often treated as a static light bulb rather than, you know, a dynamic electromagnetic engine.
Right.
When a coronal mass ejection hits the Earth, what is the actual mechanical impact on our modern systems?
So when a dense cloud of solar plasma collides with the Earth's magnetosphere, it doesn't just create beautiful auroras. It induces actual electrical currents in the ground.
In the ground itself?
Yes. These are known as geomagnetically induced currents, or GICs. Modern high-voltage power grids are incredibly vulnerable to GICs.
Oh, wow.
The current can flow up through the grounding wires of massive transformers, causing them to overheat, melt, or fail entirely.
That's terrifying.
And it goes further. Solar storms heat the upper atmosphere, the ionosphere, causing it to expand. That physical expansion creates drag on low Earth orbit satellites.
Which disrupts GPS.
It completely disrupts GPS navigation, global communications, and even the financial trading networks that rely on precise satellite timing.
So the ultimate irony is that our hyper-advanced technological grid has actually made us infinitely more vulnerable to space weather than we were 100 years ago.
Yeah, without a doubt.
But this is where the briefing issues are a really vital directive for anyone researching these phenomena, and we need to highlight this. You must separate observation from interpretation.
That is so critical.
Right. Because when people see unseasonal weather patterns and hear about massive solar flares taking out satellites, the human brain instantly wants to weave a narrative.
They want a villain.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It is so easy to fall into the trap of theorizing about cosmic control systems or engineered apocalypses. How do we stay open-minded without losing our grip on reality?
By remembering that we naturally project human intention onto natural volatility. The events are empirically real. The Earth is highly dynamic, and the stress on our infrastructure is measurable.
Right.
But when we leap to the most extreme science fiction interpretations of those events, we blind ourselves to the practical realities of what is actually occurring. Navigating this period requires extreme intellectual discipline.
You cannot let speculation become your reality.
Exactly. Stay curious, but stay grounded. Acknowledge the environmental pressure, understand the vulnerabilities in the grid, and prepare accordingly, but stay tethered to the data.
Which brings us to the ultimate cost of all this processing. The final question we need to tackle deals with the sheer psychological weight of navigating these overlapping systems.
This was a big one.
Yeah. Subscribers are asking, are we experiencing a genuine collective awakening, or is this just information overload and system stress?
The reality involves elements of both. And it's mostly driven by the collapse of the broadcast era.
The broadcast era?
Yeah. For decades, the public relied on a highly centralized narrative. You turn on a screen, and a singular, trusted authority interpreted the complexity of the world for you.
Oh, right. Like the nightly news anchor.
Exactly. But that model has fractured permanently. We have transitioned into a networked reality where thousands of independent sources, raw data points, and conflicting analyses just pour into our feeds simultaneously.
The dam broke. And the reservoir of information is just flooding the valley.
Yep.
So now, you no longer have an editor-in-chief curating your reality. You have to assume that role yourself.
And taking on the role of your own editor-in-chief induces a massive cognitive load. This creates what the briefing identifies as a global sorting process.
A sorting process?
Yes. The breakdown of centralized authority forces the individual to actively evaluate claims, assess biases, and synthesize multiple viewpoints.
I look at it as a societal pressure cooker. For some individuals, the intense heat and pressure of having to discern the truth for themselves acts as a forge.
You step up.
Yeah, it strips away their complacency and develops this incredibly sharp, active awareness. They become far more resilient. But we have to address the casualties of that pressure. What happens to the people who just can't handle the heat? The ones who cannot process the sheer volume of data?
They experience profound cognitive fatigue. When the burden of verifying reality becomes too heavy, the natural psychological defense mechanism is disengagement.
They just shut down.
They retreat. They either lock themselves into rigid algorithmic echo chambers that offer the comfort of simple answers, or they tune out the world entirely in a state of learned helplessness. The sorting process is ruthless.
It really is. It is entirely up to the individual. You can no longer outsource your thinking without becoming a victim of someone else's agenda. You have to be an active participant in your own perception.
You really do.
And that brings us to the core synthesis of this entire deep dive. We have unpacked the logistics of layered war, the grueling mechanics of energy transitions, the consolidation of institutional capital, the electrical vulnerabilities of our environment, and the psychological sorting of humanity.
It's a lot of ground to cover.
It is. So how do we draw a unified framework from all these pressure points?
By stepping back from the localized friction and observing the macro trend. The 57 sources do not point to the outright destruction of civilization.
Thank goodness.
Right. They actually point to a complex global system rapidly reorganizing under profound stress. The fundamental nature of power is shifting.
How so?
It is moving away from the static, visible markers of the 20th century, like standing armies and territorial borders, and shifting into the subtle, complex realms of systemic influence.
Oh, I see.
The future belongs to those who control supply chain logistics, high-density energy grids, and the flow of digital information. The legacy structures are cracking under the weight of this transition, and the chaos we experience daily is simply the friction of new models trying to establish dominance.
So it is a massive, chaotic remodel of the global architecture while we are all still living inside the house.
That is exactly what it is.
And for you, the truth seeker listening to this right now, this is where your perspective becomes your ultimate armor, because it is incredibly easy to feel a sense of powerlessness when massive macroeconomic and physical systems are shifting around you.
It's totally normal to feel that way.
But true stability does not require you to control the external world. You cannot dictate maritime insurance premiums. You cannot force the adoption of new energy grids. And you certainly cannot stop a coronal mass ejection.
Definitely not.
Your stability is generated purely by how you choose to relate to that external volatility.
The foundational philosophy woven through this week's briefing is that awareness creates space. Space creates clarity, and clarity restores your capacity for choice.
I love that.
When you map the underlying systems, you stop reacting blindly to the surface level noise. You replace fear with comprehension. Simple, enduring principles like critical thinking, demanding transparency, and maintaining personal accountability, they become highly practical tools for navigating an increasingly complex landscape.
You essentially become the eye of the storm.
Exactly.
Which leaves you with a final challenge to process as you go about the rest of your week. Think back to that theater analogy from the beginning. Later today, when the next massive fear-inducing headline drops, when the spotlight snaps to a new crisis and the actors start screaming center stage, how will you respond?
Will you allow your nervous system to be hijacked into an immediate blind reaction?
Or will you use the analytical tools we've discussed today to stay anchored, look past the blinding light of the media narrative, and calmly observe the actual mechanisms pulling the ropes and the rafters?
The difference between being a passive spectator and an active observer changes the entire nature of the play.
The choice is entirely yours. We are deeply grateful to have you walking alongside us in this pursuit of understanding. Until next time, stay anchored to the data, safeguard your awareness, and keep connecting the dots.